So this week, to start off the show, I've decided to give Travis, my husband, a review, like you would on Yelp or QVC, and you're reviewing a piece of clothing, and I'm going to give him a review. His rating is a 3.2 out of 5, because every time I go to use my debit card, I'll be in Target, I'll be at the grocery store, wherever, I'm declined. Now, do you know how embarrassing it is, Zach, when I go up to Publix, hey, Bruce, hey, Jane, and I go to use my debit card, and it says, ma'am, that has been declined. Do you know how embarrassing it is? So let me tell you why it's been declined.
Because it's not like you don't have money.
Correct. Okay. It's because my kids and my husband have access to that account, and they go ding-dong it, $20 here, $20 there, out of my card. I'm telling you another reason you're 3.2 this week. You know, when we go to a restaurant, Zach, we all go as a family, and we all have to get water. We get one communal soda, and we pass it around. So everybody gets a swig, and then he gets free refills. It's quite embarrassing, especially in our community. You know, they know that I'm on QVC, and they know I have a podcast and all that. And they think, well, this woman is so cheap. She's basically stealing free drinks from free refills for the whole entire family. Last but not least, every car I have gotten into this week has been empty. I have filled up 3 cars.
How far is the nearest gas station, Kim? Is it really expensive? Is that the issue?
I don't know, but if I go run my card, it's going to decline, so I'm not going to be able to pay for it anyway. So this week, Travis gets a 3.2. He did take the kids to the practices of the games and all that while I was out of town. So I'm going to give him 3.2 stars for that. But other than that, that's where you're sitting this week, Travis. All right, and send me your reviews of your spouse or your kids at thekimgravelshow.com. Let me tell you something. I just feel like I've had therapy by doing it. So do that. Drop your review in the comments, and I'll read the funniest ones on air in future episodes. Listen, let me tell you, it's the little things, y'all. You have to laugh or you'll get mad, Zach. You have to laugh or you'll get mad.
You know what? Husbands are perfect. I'm going to toe this line. We are perfect.
We'll be right back. We'll be right back.
No,
we'll be right back.
La, 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 la.
This is the Kim Gravel Show.
This is going to surprise you. My instinct has been to trust everyone else's voice and idea long before I'll trust my own.
Come on, girl. How do you get past the decision fatigue?
Oftentimes, what I want is what God wants. Like, they kind of go together.
I'm going to get emotional a little bit, Emily, because I really needed you today. Who is your celebrity crush?
I think about this a lot. Don't be bringing me a spoon for a piece of cake or pie.
You're the best rapid fire we've ever had.
What you want is what you want, whether or not you admit it.
Whoa!
And she's gone.
Okay, y'all. I am so excited to talk to Emily P. Friedman, who is on the show today. You're going to absolutely love her. She is the host of the Next Right Thing podcast, which is about creating a space, listen to this, for a really big idea. And this idea is discernment. Yeah, I said it, discernment. We're going to break that down. She's the best-selling author, and her new book just dropped last week, and it's called How to Walk Into a Room and the Art of Knowing When to Stay and When to Walk Away. So, I mean, she is so full of faith and insight, y'all. Her podcast is amazing. This book is amazing. I cannot wait to talk to her. I can't wait for you to hear from her. Please welcome
Emily P. Friedman is walking into the room.
She ain't leaving this room, Emily. You ain't leaving this room today, honey.
I want to take that with me everywhere I go forever. That's my new soundtrack.
Isn't that fabulous?
That was so great.
Every time Zach produces one of these for my guests, I get cold chills because it's like, isn't that like we should be coming into the room like that, right, Emily?
Right. Oh, every time. Totally. I know. Well, I've seen your show before and I forget y'all do that. And I'm like, what a gift. I love it.
I love it. Oh my gosh. Emily, I love you already. I feel like we are close. I feel like we could be besties. I've cyber-stalked you a little bit. You're the person, let me just give you a little praise before we break it down, because you're the kind of person, you remind me a lot of my BFF Amy, who is like the steady Eddie, and she's got this calming spirit, and I'm so chaotic, ADHD, high energy. But Emily, you have such a wisdom. This book, I think, is going to be a game changer for so many people. I really do, because I believe discernment is a spiritual gift, right? And I think we all can possess some kind of discernment. But you say everything that you do creates a space for the soul to breathe. And that helps you discern what the next right thing is. Emily, what do you mean by that? Because my soul needs to breathe, girl.
Right. You need to take a deep soul breath.
Hello. Well,
I think there's what's happening on the outside of us. And we all know, you know, we're having conversations, we're moving through our days. But then there is a whole world happening on the inside. And I think sometimes we go through life forgetting about all of the things that we're carrying around with us that people yes. can't see. And so really I see my work is to help people create space on the inside, declutter on the inside in a certain way, so that there can be space and room for us to make our decisions wisely, for us to carry what matters the most. Because otherwise, all of these other kind of distractions or things that are happening just beneath the surface kind of cloud the way and make it difficult for us to engage in the discernment process.
I know for me, Emily, like when I was reading your book, I exhaled. Do you know what I'm saying? Does that make mm-hmm. sense? Like, I feel like I'm always holding my breath. Yeah. You know what I mean? And this thing about the idea of discernment and decision fatigue. Oh, thank you, Lord. And I'm very decisive. So yeah. I'm very decisive. But being able to decide has really changed my life. It's been a game changer for me. Can you talk about what that means in terms of discernment and having this decision fatigue and what it does to us on the inside, girl?
Well, you know, they say, you know, they, all the smart researchers,
correct.
All of them.
All
okay,
them.
Okay, so they tell us, they, that adults make over 35,000 decisions every day. And that sounds like you're telling me stories. That can't be real. But when you think about it, like there are a lot of involuntary decisions that we're just kind of always making, sort of knee-jerk responses. We might not call them decisions, but that's what they are. And so there's sort of that on the surface stuff that we're always doing. And those are like the, you know, decision-making. There are seasons of our lives where we are more consciously aware of the decisions that we're making. Maybe we're deciding about schooling for our kids or mm-hmm. a job or an opportunity, and we're trying to decide what we should do. And then there are times when kind of just beneath the surface of that, we have to enter into what I call process of discernment, where it's not just the daily decisions, like where do we go for lunch or, you know, what might we do tomorrow? But it's like we're having to decide a big life change. Like, are mm-hmm. we going to move to a different city? Or someone's inviting me to this huge opportunity, but it's going to have a lot of repercussions. And so what does it look like then to not just be making decisions on the daily, but also to make a decision that's a larger decision that might actually be a series of smaller decisions? And there are times in our lives where we have a lot of those and we can get really fatigued. Like, this is a real thing where we are like, I am a decisive person normally, but I have this huge decision I'm making on top of all these smaller decisions. And if someone asked me just like, what's for lunch, I'm going to fall over, because like that's one tiny decision too many.
Okay. Where have you been all my life? And can we talk offline after this is over? I'm ditching Amy. Emily's the new BFF. She's out.
Poor Amy. Amy can call me too.
Amy probably needs you.
Poor Amy, not the reasons you think. Being my best friend is poor Amy. Seriously.
I was just thinking about like the amount of times for me where I feel like I am too burned out to even decide what to eat for lunch, right? Like that. And to me, like you sort of saying that, it speaks to me so deeply.
And the thing is, because you can feel like a crazy person because you're like, I'm a person who knows how to do this. Like, I am a grown up. I'm a boss. Like, I'm a parent or whatever. Like, I can move into the room, like making decisions. But that's such a great tell, Zach, when you realize like, oh, what to eat for lunch is actually tiring me out. That's such a great hint to know, like, there's something else at work here. There's a lot happening beneath the surface that maybe I haven't had the time or space to sort of declutter on the inside so that I have space to not feel wild when it's time for lunch.
How do you get past that? How do you get past the decision fatigue?
Yeah.
What can we do?
Well, let me tell you what. This is what I think is true. You know how we do, like, in the springtime, we'll go through our house and, like, this whole house is driving me nuts and I must clean out every closet and every drawer. And it's, you know, spring cleaning. We go out and we go through, because the reality is we're always collecting things. We're always collecting, you know, just like we went to Target and we've got the one thing, but we also got the 10 things, and we're collecting mail or we're collecting keepsakes. But we always understand that time in our bodies when we look around our house and we're like, we have to declutter, right? It's just like enough. And so we enter into that process. Well, I would say that there's this, we can do the same thing for our inner life. And I venture to say that silence, solitude, and stillness are to our soul as decluttering is to our home. And that's something we can practice. It does not come naturally for all of us.
No, it doesn't.
And it's not the default, which is why we have to do it on purpose.
You know what, Emily? It is a practice. I'm terrible at it. And Zach and I were talking for such a time as this, for your book to come out into the world, because I think the world needs this. I know in particularly women, but men too. But for me personally, yep. I'm going to get emotional a little bit, Emily, because I really needed you today. I needed you today. Zach is in a chaos place with his life and making decisions. Great moves, right? Great. We're walking out of some rooms and walking into some big rooms, girl. Yeah. And it's great decisions, but the blessings are so big. God is so good. And he's opening so many doors that I'm just sometimes, Emily, feel like I don't have enough strength or energy to walk in them.
Yeah.
What do you do when you're exhausted?
I'm so glad you brought that up, Kim, because sometimes the rooms we're entering into are like, they're rooms we've prayed for. Yeah. They are rooms we have fought for. Some of us, we've worked really hard for many, many years and dreamed about these rooms. And then when we get there, we're so tired from the journey that it's difficult to even enjoy the room, at least at first when we get there. And so I do think that one of the ways to walk into a room with confidence is to pay attention and to recognize the rooms we just left. And it might seem counterintuitive, like, well, but that's past, that's before me. But I think part of entering a room in freedom and with some confidence is being able to release the rooms that we have just experienced in the form of doing this with some reflection, of some gratitude practices. I have found when endings come, because the reality is when you're starting something new, you're also ending something. And sometimes we're so quick to rush to the new that we don't take the time to release the old. And the reality is this new room might not have space for the old stuff too. And I have found it to be helpful for me because, I mean, to mark an ending, there's so many times when an ending comes and goes and there's no marking of it.
Yes.
And
yes.
So for me, I have found it to be helpful before entering this new room, whether it's this room I have wanted for so long, or if it's a difficult room that we're getting ready to enter, I found it to be helpful to look at the last room, the last space that I've just left, and to name the gifts of that room that I'm going to bring with me. And then also to name maybe the difficulties or the burdens of that room that I'm going to leave behind. Every room has gifts and burdens. And going through that process with the last room, I think helps me enter the new room with renewed energy.
Is that why you start the book, you know, How to Walk Out of a Room? I mean, you start with the ending.
I start with the ending. What I'm saying? Right. Yeah. It can be like, wait a minute. She's talking about walking into a room and the first 2/3 of the book is about walking out. How does this go?
But I did too. Yeah. I thought that was genius. And I will tell you, I mean, let's dive deeper into that, because is discernment attached to that, Emily?
I think it is. I think when we have a decision to make, we often are looking for what's my next thing to do. Like, and I'm all about that. I mean, I'm all about doing the next right thing. But I think before we can discern our next right thing, it's really important to look at what was my last right thing. This can be deeply informative for us.
Oh, we got to pause on that now, Emily. Don't rush through that one. Say that again. Mm-hmm. Did y'all hear that?
Yes. Before moving on to our next right thing, it's important to know and name what was my last right thing.
I love that. I want to read a sentence from your book, if I can.
So good.
So you write right in the beginning, this is like page 15. When things end, our first assumption may be that something went wrong. And like, I underline just that. Right. And I could go on and I won't, but I just like it. That's so true to me in so many ways. And it's like, you know, we have these just different seasons in our lives. And to me, not being able to let go properly of something that I liked to have in my life has been really hard and led to so much heartache, you know?
Yeah. Yes. And I think, Zach, it's a great point because especially as you're talking about entering a room that you've wanted, but knowing and naming that the mere existence of that room might automatically mean the absence of something else.
Yeah.
And being able to recognize what has ended, because especially like, for example, if you're growing into something new, into a new space, but there is sometimes like this blessed sacredness of smallness and of hiddenness and of like something that you feel like you have a little bit of, maybe not control, that sounds like a negative, but yeah, like you're ready. You're like I know this.
The part of the preparing, it's the little, oh yes, Emily.
Yes. But knowing is, okay, that's over now, that's past, and that helped us get where we are, but it's not going to be like that in this new room. And I'm going to have to walk into this new room as a beginner. And let me tell you what, if there's one thing people don't like, it's being a beginner. I'm all about a new beginning. Like, listen, give me the spring flowers. Give me a starting over. Give me a fresh start.
Give me a new house.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I don't want to clean the toilet. Give me a new one. I'd like a new one, please.
I love new.
But when that's fine when it's out there. But when it becomes something about me that I am showing up as new, as a beginner, absolutely not. I don't love it. I don't love it, Kim. I would rather be experienced. I would rather know what's going on. I would rather be in charge and sure of myself. And so sometimes these rooms we're entering, while they may be great and a gift and all the things, they also come with some the newness that we might not be as welcoming to. Like, I am new here. I don't know the password. I don't know the inside jokes. I don't know the ropes.
Ooh, and don't have the confidence.
Exactly.
Because we don't know what we don't know.
That's right.
I am a woman of faith. I have walked and had my personal relationship with the Lord for so many years, since I was 7. And there are seasons in my life that I hear him more clearly. I can discern things more clearly. And sometimes I cannot. What can you tell us about what discernment really is? Because I love how you're talking about the book. It's like in the hallway. Like your discernment gets you from place to place, right?
Yeah.
The knowing.
Yeah.
How do we get there?
I think the simplest way that I have found to describe what discernment feels like is it's not so much I'm entering into a discernment process to find an answer, but we're more looking for arrows. And what I mean by that, I'll use an example. I live in North Carolina. If I was going to leave my house in North Carolina and go to Montana, I can't leave my little town and see a street sign that says this way to Montana.
Right.
It's not gonna happen. It's too far away. But what I can do is I can get on I-40 and I can see this way to Winston-Salem, this way to Asheville. And I'll follow the road signs along the way. Now, eventually, if I get on the right roads, I'm going to end up in Montana. But I can't know that from North Carolina because it's just too far away. And I think that's often how discernment feels. It's instead of sort of having a question and then we get an answer, instead we have a question and then we might pray. We might talk to people who know and love us deeply, who understand who we are and what we most value. We might think about what we deeply want. And that's something, by the way, that I think a lot of us are afraid to tap into is desire. But I think that's a really important part of discernment because here's my own little rabbit trail. What you want is what you want, whether or not you admit it. And it will inform your next right thing. It will inform your decision-making. But the question is, do you want it to inform it with your eyes open or with your eyes closed? So tapping into desire is saying, my eyes are open. I am aware of what I want. But the difference is, and this is why we are afraid to admit what we want, because we confuse it with demanding what we want. But admitting and confessing what I want is like an open hand, but demanding what I want is a closed hand. And so I would say part of discernment is knowing and naming what we want, but not demanding it go that way. And so that's another arrow we can follow is, what is it that I want? But am I open to God and to spirit if I don't actually get that thing?
But this is the thing, Emily. Why do you think people are afraid to express and move from what they want? Do you know what I'm saying? Like, it's like, yeah. Don't you think it's like, and Zach, help me out here. Don't you think the world is like, it's like an oxymoron. We tell everybody, go for what you want, do this and that. But at the same time, we feel guilty or feel like we can't say what we truly want. I thought that was brilliant when you said that, because I feel the same way. And it's like, it took me many years to get to the place where like, dadgummit, that's what I want and I'm going for it.
Yeah.
You know, and God will lead me if he wants me to have it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I trust, I put my faith in him and I trust the discernment to follow those arrows, like you said. But why do you think, especially women, Emily, especially women, have a hard time saying, I want this?
I don't think we've had a lot of good models. I think it depends on our family of origin. And especially, I would say, people who have grown up in church. A lot of us have been taught that what we want, and I don't know that we've been taught it directly. I think we've picked it up along the
picked
way.
We picked it up.
That if I want it, then it must not be right. If I want it, it must not be what God wants. And we somehow think it's selfish to be able to name what we want. But I think that's because we have conflated knowing and naming what I want with demanding what I want.
I love
that. Together, like it's all one thing.
What is demanding? What is wanting what I want, you know, soul? And then what is demand? Tell me what you mean by that.
So let's say, I think sometimes it's helpful to hang your hat on an actual example. So I'm going to try to think of
one. Do it.
Think about maybe there is an opportunity that you've been given. Like for me, you know, I'm an author. Sometimes I get invited to speak at things. Like, let's say there was an opportunity, an invitation to speak at something that like sounds really fun and really exciting. And like, it would be really in alignment with what I think I'm good at doing. So there's a part of me that's like, ooh, I might want to do that. But then there's this other part of me that's like, but if I do that, then I'm going to be, you know, I have to consider my family. I'm going to consider like, I'm going to be gone from home and then my husband's going to pick up the slack and all of these things. Right. And so there's this like pull, which is very natural, normal. I mean, these are natural, normal things. There's this pull of like, oh, but you know, maybe I shouldn't want to go. Maybe that's bad that I want to go because maybe I'm being selfish. Right. And I think a normal, natural human thing is to get an invitation, to think about whether or not you want it, to talk to your people, to look at your calendar, to consider all of the things you need to consider, and then to make a choice, right? I don't think it has to have a morality or a identity thing attached to it, but I think that's what we do. And so instead of like kind of taking it at like, this is just a neutral thing, like, do I want to do it? Have I thought it through? Have I talked to my people? Does it fit with our schedule? Yes or no? Instead of that, I think sometimes we get our identity all conflated up in it. And we start to think like, well, if I was a good mom, I wouldn't leave my house. I mean, this is, you know, extreme example, but I think sometimes those narratives are in the back of our minds.
Oh, yes.
And it depends on like what our own moms did as we were growing up, what our friends do, what we think about ourselves, and all of those things can get kind of muddy the water. And so I think that idea of like, you know, saying what I want doesn't feel like enough. And of course, sometimes it's not. Sometimes we need to have other points of data. But what I find more often is that people don't use what they want as a point of data at all. We don't consider it
correct
at all. But what I have found in my own walk with God is that oftentimes that because I've been given a new heart and because I believe God lives in me, oftentimes what I want is what God wants. Like they kind of go together. And I think I have found over time that the beautiful thing about walking in faith is that I think God's a lot less interested in the very details of like right or wrong or this way or that way than he is on us just trusting him as we go along the way.
Yes.
And knowing that no matter what thing I choose, God's going to go with me. And
yes,
I can trust that and know that. And even if I stumble along the way and kind of make a move that like, oh, that could have gone differently, God's with me there too. And we can redirect.
He is in the business of redirecting, and it's not plan B or C. It's not plan B or C. Okay.
That's right.
We got to take a quick break, but when we come back, I want you to make the decision, y'all listening, to keep on listening, because I've got more with Emily P. Freeman after this short break. Discernment, walking in rooms, walking out of rooms, I mean, she said, given a new heart. Y'all, come back. Y'all, what are your springtime goals? I mean, mine is to stay healthy and to keep my weight off and to love my Factor meals because they are calorie smart meals and they have helped me so much with my portion control and to support our show and to support your own health. And just for our listeners, you get 50% off your first box of Factor Meals and 20% off your next one by visiting factormeals.com/Kim50 and use code Kim50 at checkout. Listen, Factor Meals are fresh. They're never frozen. They're chef crafted, dietitian approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. And the most important part, they taste so good that even my kids steal them from me. Before Factor, when I needed a fast meal, I would hit the drive-thru. Well, not anymore, because they have popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, Vegan and Veggie. I mean, they're tailored to you and your schedule. And Factor is celebrating Earth Day all month long. So look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for their lowest carbon footprint meals. Head on over to factormeals.com/Kim50 and use code Kim50 to get 50% off your first box, plus an extra 20 off of your next box. That's code Kim50 at factormeals.com/Kim50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. Try Factor Meals, get healthy, and give full. They're good, y'all.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is the thing about you, Emily. Okay. I'm going to tell you right now, like, I need more of people like you in my life because there's a calm to you. There is a presence to you. Truly, God has gifted you with this message. And I can feel like you've lived it. It sounds like you're speaking from actual experience of walking out of rooms, being able to listen and discern as you're walking into a new, how do you walk into this new room as a leader and as a listener?
Mm-hmm. Something I have learned along the way. And again, I don't share it because I do it great, just because I've done it a lot.
Yeah, right.
You know, it's like sometimes it's just repetition, right? It's not so much perfection. I learned this, and I've learned this a lot along the way, but one of the times I can point to where I've learned this most profoundly was I went to grad school as an adult. I went back to school, was not in the plan, did not plan it, but there I was. But I found myself in this room full of like people who I could have very quickly been intimidated by, you know, this academic setting and talking about spiritual formation and lots of pastors and leaders in the room. And, you know, I was one of the students. And I remembered thinking, though, the importance that I mean, it was almost like I remember specifically the moment of realizing, like, I'm not in charge in this room. This is not my room. Like, I'm not the one in charge, but I can still be a leader even though I'm not in charge. And as a student, that sort of occurred to me as something, you know, it's not a new thought. It's not my own thought that's, you know, it occurred to me in a new way that here I am as a student showing up in this room, this physical, true classroom, and all these other people here are showing up here as well as themselves. But none of us have showed up here, like we mentioned before, with a blank slate. Like we're all bringing like our whole stories into this room, all of our narratives. And this story has already been this story of me has already been happening for all these years. Same goes with them. And so I can't depend on the person in charge to lead me well if I'm not leading myself well.
Right.
And so that's like the first time I remember really articulating like, oh, I'm this school. Yes, I'm learning things about theology. I'm learning things about spirituality, but I'm actually learning how to walk into a room as myself rather than as a counterfeit version of somebody else, rather than trying to live my life in a way that I think someone else thinks I ought to be, but actually sitting down on the inside, no matter what's happening on the outside, and recognizing that with my friend Jesus, that I can show up in this space as my whole self. And actually I must, leading myself first, even if I'm not the one in charge here.
And there you go. There's the podcast. Put a pin in it. We're done. I'm just kidding. But that, that is my whole message to Emily, is walking in. You're calling your purpose, but I like what you said, as your, as who you are, your authentic self. So many people, and me included, because I know, because I'm sitting, sometimes when I'm talking to people, I'm like, this ain't me. I'm being fake. This ain't really right. me.
Yep.
You know, I think we recognize that internally. We're set. Okay. And so, but when, because so many people will say to me, like, why did this go well for you? Or how did this operate? And I thought, well, I don't know, because I'm just a little rick-rack paddywhack. But I truly believe it's that being who you are, who he created you, because that's the superpower, right? That, him, he's a superpower, but that is your personal superpower, is that authentic self. What gives us, I don't know, what gives you, Emily, that kind of confidence and that leadership to be your own leader and be yourself?
It's such an excellent question. And I'm here to confess to you, I've spent a lot of my life outsourcing my confidence.
Whoa! And
she's gone.
She's gone. She's that's gone. It. That's just it's such over. A huge idea. I mean, this is...
You can't, this is such you, a got huge... you can't run through these ideas. Emily, you're coming up with an idea every 2 seconds. You got to slow down now.
We'll slow
I'm
down.
From the
we'll
South. You're from the South too, girl. You're in North Carolina. I'm from Georgia. We're a little bit slower.
Right. You're a little bit more South.
I'm a little bit more South.
Right.
I mean, I'm a scotch from Alabama, honey. We there, okay? And you know when you get to Florida, it's all over. But say that again.
You asked about confidence. Like, how yeah. are you showing up with confidence and leading yourself? And I will say that I have spent a lot of my life outsourcing my own confidence. And to unpack that a little bit, I'll say, and probably a lot of people can relate with this, right? This idea of sitting at a table where, like a true physical table, not a metaphorical table, where there are many voices around the table. And your instinct, my instinct has been over time to trust everyone else's voice and idea long before I'll trust my own.
Come on, girl.
And what I have been in the process of over the last several years, I mean, 10 years maybe, but especially the last 4 or 5, is learning to tap into my own home on the inside, the home I bring with me wherever I go. Because guess what? Who are we going to be with for the rest of our lives? Ourselves. This girl right here. I'm going to walk into every room with me. So I may as well get comfortable. And I may as well begin to listen to what she has to say.
Come on.
And how can I expect other people to listen to what I have to say if I'm not even willing to do that for myself? And again, this comes back to knowing what we want. It's that same space in us that doubts and distrusts our own yeah. desire is the space that doubts and distrusts our own voice. It comes from yes. the same place.
Same place.
And so learning to sitting around a table to truly like honor my own voice at the table, not above other people's, not to the exclusion of other people's, but to honor my voice too.
So how much of this idea, right, that you're there and you're sort of outsourcing and you're not being able to be authentic is because you're just in the wrong room? And how much is it like sort of the, you know, I'm thinking of that as like the outside work of like putting yourself in the right place versus the inside work of like, you know, working on yourself, working on your confidence, working on, you know, all those other things and your faith and that. But, you know, how much of it is one versus the other? Or is that sort of the wrong way to think about it?
Oh, I don't think that's the wrong way at all. I think that what you just said right there is an excellent practice of what I call pointing and calling. And this is a practice that comes from, so the Japanese railway system is the safest and best in the world. And it's because of their safety practice called pointing and calling. And in that, it's very elementary almost. Like a train comes into the station and they point to the train and they say, train has arrived. And they'll look at the time and they point to the time and they say the time out loud, 8:35 a.m. And this is like what? This is not a thing, but it is a thing evidently because they have reduced workplace errors by 85%.
Wow.
And so they're the safest in the world. This, and it's because of this practice. In the same way, we can do this for the rooms of our lives, the various rooms. And when I say rooms, now I'm speaking metaphorically, could be physically, sure. But the rooms, the commitments, the relationships, the parts of life that we're a part of, the places where we both feel like we belong or places where we feel like maybe we don't, we can do a practice of pointing and calling by asking a series of questions. Some of those questions include, is this a room that chose me or did I choose it? Ooh. Who is in this room right now? Who is here? Who has already left this room and who is entering? But another question you ask, Zach, is can I be myself in this room? To what extent can I be myself in this room? And if people who knew me the best showed up in this room and observed me, would they recognize me? Or would they have some questions? And I think this alone isn't necessarily a determiner to say you're in the wrong room, but it's a great marker. It's a great practice of pointing at that and saying, okay, this is a room that I chose. This is a room that I feel pretty comfortable in. However, I'm recognizing increasingly that I am not able to be myself here. And this is something to pay attention to. It's not a final statement. It's not a final decision, but it can be an arrow of whether or not this is the room for me.
Are you overworked, underpaid, exhausted, but love your kids so much and want to be the best mama for them?
How about the best version of you? You deserve that.
I'm Gianna DiMedio Simon.
And I'm Casey McDonald Hosmer, and we are moms who absolutely love our new roles in life.
But man, were we not prepared for some of the fine print in the job description.
We want a connection with our children and our partner that doesn't come at the cost of the relationships with our own selves.
We're helping you mother up every Monday on your favorite podcast player. Also, check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/@motheruppod.
The last section of your book is when you're talking about walk into the room as your own friend.
Yeah.
And can I just tell you, you can't pour from an empty cup. I know that firsthand because I have tried and tried and tried and tried. And is that what you're talking about there? What are you talking about when you say walk into the room as your own friend?
I think it starts with honoring our own voice at the table.
Okay.
I think it continues with what poet and theologian Padraig O Tuama says, we might know more than we know we know.
Come and with it.
Honoring the reality that, you know, I might actually know more than I know I know. And maybe I can trust that as I move forward, as if I would trust a friend, as if Kim, you would trust Amy. You know, you wouldn't constantly
now
doubt
Emily.
Amy's voice.
Now Emily too.
We're going to bring her in.
We're going to bring you in too.
But it is, it's like, wow, I doubt myself, but I don't doubt my best friend or my partner. Like, not to the degree that I often doubt myself. And so I think that's how it begins, is that trust relationship with yourself, which might sound a little woo-woo, like what does that even look like? But I think it starts with honoring your own voice at the table. Yeah. I mean, and then continuing on to offering yourself compassion in those times when you're not showing up like yourself. Like there have been plenty of times, even in this process of like learning more about myself and changing my mind on some things, just as you grow and change naturally in life, is, you know, I'll be in a situation where maybe I hear something said that I'm like, ooh, that's offensive to someone. And I should probably defend that person. But this is new territory for me. And maybe I'm learning how to show up as my full self. There was a time when, you know, if I weren't to speak up or speak into that, I might feel a lot of shame about that. I still might. Like, ugh, I say I believe this thing, but then I didn't speak up to defend that person when they were hurt. But I think there's a process that we're all in, right? That we have to learn to like, okay, I noticed that and I didn't speak up then. Maybe next time I will. And I can offer myself the compassion and the grace to be a learning person. And I think that's what it also means to be your own friend.
And like, don't like, because we wouldn't beat our friends up if they made a mistake or didn't do exactly. Yeah, I love that. I think that is just, I mean, there's so many things that you say in the book and that you've said today that you could have a whole podcast and books around just those little ideas. There's one thing I want to ask you though, because I know you have a weekly newsletter and it's called Soul Minimalist. What in the world does that mean?
I'm so glad you asked it because it really goes back. We're bringing it back around like Seinfeld.
I love
all the way back. It comes all the way back to the beginning, to this idea of decluttering on the inside. And really, we know what minimalism is. Minimalism is letting go of what you don't need so that what you do need has more impact.
Oh,
so that
yes.
the things that you have, they mean more, right? Well, we understand that on the physical level of our homes or minimalists, we get what that means. But when you bring in soul to it, what does it look like then to get rid of what I don't need on the inside, on the soul level, so that the things that I value the most can have more impact? So that the things that I care about the most can actually determine and have impact on my decisions that I'm making. Because we walk around all the time, like we said before, with so much input. And the question becomes, where's the output? There's no natural output. We have to work on that output. And to me, that is entering a practice of stillness, like real, like 5 minutes of stillness, like with a timer, I do that, of silence, where it's just like, I'm going to sit in this room without an agenda and without a screen and just be a person for a few minutes, and solitude, which raising my hand, that one's the most difficult for me. Not
me
that
too.
I don't like to be alone. I actually like being alone, but I don't like being alone without something else that I'm doing, right? Like alone in a room by myself without my phone or without something to watch or without something to read. Like, that's uncomfortable for me. So
yeah,
this idea of like not being observed or not depending on someone else, that's a more of a challenge. And I would say probably everyone, when it comes to solitude, stillness, and silence, there's probably one of those that we're drawn to, and there's probably one of those that we are repelled by. And so it's interesting to kind of think about what those might be.
Should we be doing what we're repelled by? Because a lot of times I fight like tooth and nail.
Right.
Knowing what I should do and
right.
do not do it. Okay,
and
wasn't that Paul?
It.
That was Paul. I know the things I should do. Why do I do the things I shouldn't do? It's just, this is such a topic, of course, that's universal and everybody relates to. But I think in particularly now, you know, the stillness in the meditation practice and faith and prayer and just being quiet, because it's such a distracting world. And it's hard, Emily. It really is hard.
Yeah.
Life is so fast and it's so, like you said, there's so much input, but not a lot of output. How can we, as believers, as people of faith, as people who are desperate, you know, to be authentic in a really unauthentic world, where can we start, Emily? I mean, I know that's a big, big idea question here, but I really think people want to know where to even begin.
I think my best word for that, Kim, is beginning with knowing that we are loved and that God does not have an agenda for us in the way that we might imagine. That no matter what we choose to do or how busy we are, that we are deeply and profoundly beloved. That there is nothing that we could do that would take us out of the sacred and a kind love of God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Mm.
And I think when we begin there, anything that comes after that is a whole lot kinder.
All right. Your voice is like, I'm going to download the book on audio because are you reading it?
I do, yes.
Yeah, if somebody else is reading it, I ain't getting it. But if you're reading it, I'm going to get it.
Right.
No, Emily, y'all have got to go get this book, How to Walk Into a Room, The Art of Knowing When to Stay and When to Walk Away by Emily P. Freeman. Okay, Emily, you can't leave us yet because we do something with every single guest. You got to come back. Please come back. Pray
Absolutely.
About coming back because I got more questions for you. But for right now, I don't want to keep you because I could talk to you for 3 hours. We do something with every guest called the Rapid Fire Questions. Now, look. I say this every time and everyone's like, okay, sure. And I say, I'm going to ask you a question. First thing comes up, comes out. And they're like, yeah, but they always get stumped and they just don't. But I believe you, Emily.
Okay.
You're going to come on out with it. Okay.
First
thing comes
it.
Up, comes out. All right, here we go.
Rapid fire questions.
What is one skill you wish you had?
I wish I could dance.
Oh, you can't dance?
I mean, I can bebop, but I want to be like on So You Think You Can Dance. Like that's the kind of dancing I want to do.
Well, Lord,
it's too
girl.
Late for me. But I mean, you asked. First thing that came out, Kim.
What kind of dance would you do? Like, what's your favorite kind of music? What kind of style do you like?
Oh, gosh. Let me tell you what. I mean, speaking in So You Think You Can Dance language. I mean, when they do like those lyrical, like partner dances, and it's like I remember two of them danced to Ingrid Michaelson's Turn to Stone. I can't remember which two dancers it was. Years ago, it was magical. And I mean, it's just so like, it's basically like poetry, but expressing with your body. It's beautiful.
Honey,
I also watch those dancers who do like impromptu swing, and they just like their partners. You see these on Instagram a lot where they're like partners and they just play a song and they know how to like, they just make stuff up. It's kind of like swing dancing. Love it.
I've been watching that on social media. I was just going to say to you, my body hadn't been able to express itself in a long time through dance. So I'm aged out there. Okay. If you could put one thing in a time capsule, what would it be?
I think I would put a time capsule to be opened when?
20 years from now. No, 100 years from now.
100 years.
100 years. Let's do it.
Well, maybe it would be, it'd probably be my iPhone.
I know, right? Are you obsessed with yours like I am?
It would be such a relic. Like to look at 100 years from now, I'm like, remember when we thought this was newfangled? And it'll be so antiquated.
Girl, did you grow up in the 80s, Emily?
Yeah.
Okay. So did you remember the cell phones that you had carried around and it was
the
like
cell
a big
phones? Right. This
hello.
Hello. You know, antenna.
Kim, you mentioned those big cell phones on a recent episode, and I tried to find like a really good clip of someone using one of those cell phones. Could not find it. Like they're so old, there isn't even stock footage
pictures.
Of cell
there's
phones
no
like
evidence.
That. Yeah.
There's no evidence of those. But I remember them. I remember when microwaves came out, people. I remember. Yeah. Okay. We can go down that path. Okay. This is a good one, Emily. It's going to make you think. If you were a professional wrestler, what would your name be?
Penelope French.
That came so fast. I'm curious. How did that happen?
Okay. I'll start with my middle name is Patrice with a P. Okay. But I have a friend who tried to guess one time what my middle name was because I knew it started with a P. And he guessed Penelope. Well, that's not it, but it stuck. So he teases, and every time he sees me, he calls me Emily Penelope. And so when you said that, I'm like, well, Penelope comes out. And then French is just like it has to be a one syllable something. Cause if it's like a Penelope, that's long. So then
it's
you need
long.
Like a quick something. And that's just what came out. I can't help it. And I can't explain it.
It's a classy wrestler name. I could see it. I see your costume now as you're saying it. I can see it.
Right.
Very classy.
Mm-hmm. Maybe okay, some feathers are in there somewhere.
Okay, now that's going down a whole nother road. Here we go. What is the last thing you Googled? Oh, Lord.
Oh, no.
Look it up. What'd you do?
Let's see. History. Okay, it was what happened with the primary election.
Yeah.
That's what she looked up.
Yep. There you go.
And then
we had our primaries.
I looked up funny basketball clips to send to my son.
That's so much more fun.
I'm just telling you, I don't know what I would do without Google. I mean, that is, but
what
that's the new encyclopedia. That's, people don't understand that. Right. Remember when we had the encyclopedias, Emily, I used to smell them. I used to love how they smell. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. I'm not a weirdo then. Okay. Maybe I am, but y'all are too. Okay,
not
here we go.
Of that. Yeah.
No, right. We all are.
Let's be honest.
What future invention are you most looking forward to?
Oh, well, I think, I'm looking forward to when we can blink and arrive somewhere.
Me too. I was going to say the same thing. Like, what is that called?
Like teleportation.
Teleportation.
Yeah.
Like Star Trek. Yeah.
I'm here for that invention. Whoever's
I'm
got that.
I'm so going here
on.
For that right now.
Yeah.
And I would like in the interim, I would take hover like vehicles that could just
sure.
like in the air. Okay.
Don't they kind of have those a little bit?
They've got them on the ocean, on the water. You know those people that doing that mm-hmm. they fly, but they never seem stable. So I'm going to wait till it gets really, really good.
No.
You need
We're
a jetpack, Kim.
We're going to wait on
that. Would be.
Can you imagine me jetpacking? I would kill myself. Here we go. I mean, I would hit a wall.
I could. I mean, it would be hilarious.
I can barely drive on the ground, much less in the air. Okay. What is your biggest pet peeve, Emily?
Okay. This one's weird.
No,
and
okay.
We're just going to have to go with it, and you're going to just have
it.
To trust me.
I do.
I do not like spoons. And hear me out. I will use a spoon for ice cream or cereal or soup. But don't be bringing me a spoon at a restaurant for a piece of cake or pie. Don't be doing it. I can't. I can't okay, do it, Kim.
Wait a minute. What about a spork? What about a spork?
He's got a spoon. Now a spork. The only time I'll use a spork is at Kentucky Fried Chicken with their mashed potatoes because they're the ones. Because that's my childhood. Other than that, unacceptable. Give me a fork. So I'll have to ask them, like, hello, you're bringing dessert. Don't take my fork away or bring me a clean one. But don't be trying to serve me cake with a spoon. Absolutely not.
Okay. Let me just tell you, I'm leaving here now and going to get a two-piece all-white with coleslaw and mashed potatoes Kentucky Fried Chicken right now.
And a spork.
Oh, my gosh.
No joke. And I'm getting my spork and I'm dedicated to you. Okay, here we go. What's one thing that baffles you about men? Lord have mercy, honey.
Wow.
That's a whole nother podcast, Emily. It's me and you.
Right. Well, I don't know that I can speak for all men because I don't know all men. I only know the men who live in my house, which is my husband and my son.
How many
you got? I got a husband, I got a son. And I'll tell you what, it boggles my mind how heavy their footfall is. Like, why you got to be stomping around?
Do they flush?
Why can't you just take a step like a normal human person? Yeah. It's like John and I will walk around the block and it's like,
boom, boom, boom.
And I'm like, listen to how I walk. And then we listen to how he walks. But then I guess there's part of me that's like, I mean, do I want him like light footed around? Maybe I don't. Maybe that's not what I really want. But it is so loud in here. So loud.
Girl, I live with three men. Two husbands. Do they flush?
I mean, so this is a podcast. Let's see. Will they hear this? Will they watch this?
Be real,
this?
Emily. Be authentic.
It depends on the day.
Got it. That's fair
good
enough.
Good days and bad days.
See, that's okay. Here we go. Do you believe AI is good or bad?
Oh, good or bad. What a binary. Okay. So AI kind of freaks me out. I'm not going to lie.
In a good way or a bad way?
In not a good way, my dear.
Got it.
It's a little too something. I don't know what.
It's a little too invasive. Maybe.
Yeah. And like as a writer too, there's a whole thing, you know,
I get you.
So yeah, it's a little concerning. I would say bad, but then again, you know, would I have said that about Google however many years ago? Probably.
I think my parents did.
What would we do?
I mean, I can't tell you. My mom used to say, that's the devil. I mean, I can't.
Right.
What did she say the other day? I got so tickled. I said something. You know, I can't remember what it was. She goes, that's just nothing but the devil. I mean, I've heard that. Like, I remember when I bought the Prince Purple Rain soundtrack. Which was edgy. That's edgy.
Totally. Yeah.
Okay. And she said, that's the devil. Okay. Speaking of, what song will you always sing when it comes on?
Oh, this is tough, Kim.
It's good.
Had a cheat sheet.
No, it's good ones. Nope. You're good. You're the best rapid fire we've ever had.
I know what song it is.
Go.
It's this song whenever it comes on. It's the Spin Doctors' Two Princes.
Ooh. Ah.
One,
good
two.
One.
Princes who adore you. Just go ahead now. You know it. You know
it. I do. Oh my gosh, it's a great song.
I can't
you
not
can.
Sing it.
That is a great song.
It's just a good voice, too.
It doesn't matter where I am. Yeah. That's the one.
Which movie could you watch unlimited sequels of?
Oh, The Wizard of Oz. It's my favorite movie.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Keep it going forever.
I liked Lord of the Rings. I could have had that one go on and on and on.
Oh, yeah. Kim, it did go on and on. What do you mean? It went on and on.
You got your wish.
I was just talking to someone about how Lord of the Rings had like 27 endings. They're like,
I've watched it. They kept wrapping those storylines up, Kim.
They were just going on. 35 minutes later, it ended 17
Four hours
times.
And 75 minutes later. Yeah. Okay, here we go. Oh, all right, Emily, what is your favorite junk food? Oh, that's a good one.
Okay, so this is a little bit harkening back to my childhood.
Okay, go.
I don't know if I would say it now, but I think growing up, like the ultimate favorite junk food was the Little Debbie, the Swiss cake rolls. Mm. Do you remember those?
Oh,
and they have the chocolate on the outside and the white cream in the middle.
And the cream, and they're rolled.
And they're rolled. Yeah, the
best. You don't buy those now?
I can't. I'd eat them all. I can't.
Well, I've got some at the house. You can have some. Come on. That's the point.
Emily, you got to eat them all.
You're going to have those after your Kentucky Fried Chicken lunch.
If you don't think I'm going to Kentucky Fried Chicken, y'all crazy. I'm leaving right here and going through the drive-thru. Okay, here we go. Who is your... That's a good... What about a salty snack? What about your salty junk food? So that's your sweet.
Salty right now is chips and salsa all day and all night.
Okay. No Cheetos, no Funyuns, none of those?
No.
Okay. Chips and salsa is a, I would call that a health food though. I don't
it's
know.
It's healthy, right?
Yeah, it's
that's
very healthy.
That's what I'm saying. It's thank you tomatoes. For confirming okay, that. Here we go. It's fruit. I mean,
it's fruit.
Vegetables.
It's fruit and vegetables. Mm-hmm. Who is your celebrity crush? Now this one, Emily, I have a lot of faith in you on this. You've got to really hone in and make it count.
Okay, I'm ready. I'm ready for this.
You've already ready? Oh, okay, go.
Oh, I'm ready right now because I think about this a lot. This is going to surprise you. You're not ready.
I'm okay. I'm
because
ready.
It's kind of quirky and weird.
No, go for it.
We're ready.
It's Jimmy Fallon. I told you.
I love that.
He's just so funny. It's so happy.
Absolutely no
He's
judgment.
So happy,
Jimmy.
Kim.
He is. He's funny. He's hilarious.
Do you watch him every night? Do you watch Fallon?
Not every night, but he'd be such a great guy to have around, I think.
I think you have great taste. I think he's kind. He's funny.
Wait, are y'all going to answer this question or is it just me?
Emily, I was thinking like Brad Pitt. I'm thinking hot Hollywood. Okay.
Sure. Fine. Okay. But I mean, when you're thinking like...
In a pinch, Brad Pitt, I guess.
Fine, whatever.
Yeah.
Right. But I mean... You know, but then there's also like Taylor Swift. I mean, we can go the whole gamut. Like, it's like, oh,
well,
look at
are
her.
You,
she's so dear.
I can be a Swiftie on a warm day with the windows rolled down for sure.
Right.
And I'm really into Keanu Reeves right now. I'm really having a Keanu Reeves face.
Interesting. What has inspired that moment for you?
My sons and husband don't flush or don't bathe a lot. And I think he doesn't either. So I think it's just it's familiarity.
You're into it.
Oh,
that's good.
Okay. One last question. What room are you walking into next, Emily?
Okay. All right. I'm going to tell you, in a couple of months, I'm going to walk into a room of rest. I'm going to take a little time off and kick it on back and actually have a summer where I'm not working my tail off. Right. So I'm really looking forward to that room. I'm not there yet, but I'll get there soon.
Take me with you. All right. Emily P. Friedman's book is called How to Walk Into a Room, The Art of Knowing When to Stay and When to Walk Away. Y'all, it's available right now everywhere books are sold. Her podcast is called The Next Right Thing. I'm telling you, go wherever podcast you listen to your podcast, download that, subscribe to it right now. It's called The Next Right Thing. Follow her on Instagram at Emily P. Friedman. And I got to tell you, Emily, I feel like we're going to be close, girl. We cannot not stay in touch. Please.
I love it. What a gift.
No, I'm serious, girl. You are exactly what we need right now in this world. Your voice, your message, you've blessed my heart. And I know you've blessed Zach too. We love you, girl.
Thank you. Kim and
Come
Zach,
back.
Y'all are a delight. I will.
Come back.
Thank you so much, Emily. This was great.
We love you, girl.
Bye, Emily.
Next up, I've got a listener voicemail from a woman named Jeanette, and we've got outtakes and dancing during the credits, so you don't want to miss any of that. Okay, this week we have a voicemail from Jeanette, who I just wanted to give a little extra encouragement to. Take a listen.
Hi, Kim. I just love to watch you on QVC. I think you're so funny, and I think my husband does too. And one day I said, hey, Kim, it's not going to be on today. He said, well, crap. Anyway, I just love you and your clothes and everything. Wish you the best. Hope you're doing okay. Prayers for you. And I love Amy too. You both girls have just really lost weight. I mean, I've been watching you all along, so... It's a big incentive to get started. So love you all. Bye-bye.
Okay. Jeanette is, I love you, girl. Jeanette and your hubby. He has got good taste in women all the way around. And thank you for the prayers. I'm telling you, I'm healing. My Bell's palsy is going away, getting better every day. And girl, I want to encourage you. The weight loss it's changed my life. It has changed my life. So I am rooting for you, girl, and standing in the gap for you on that. And look, if you want to hear your voicemail on the show or you just want to call us and let us know what you got going on, give us a call at 404-913-6460. And Zach, we'll get them on the show.
Yeah, we're going to listen. We listen to all your voicemails. We pick the ones that are the best, the funny. I want funny voicemails. Can you start leaving us funny voicemails? Tell us what your husbands think of the show. That would be great.
Can you believe her husband said, well, crap.
Well, crap.
That's it. I just love that. The man's got taste. And listen, thank you for listening. If you like this episode, then share it with somebody. Let somebody know and help us grow this community of women who are loving who we are right where we're at. All right. Till next time. I'm Kim.
I'm Zach.
And we love you. Oh, this might be, I don't know, Emily. I might be going off on a rabbit trail here. If I am, just tell me. Next week, we have a dancing expert, Emily. Maybe you should pop on. Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah. From So You Think You Can Dance. Can you imagine? No. See, is this a new room?
Is this my next right thing, Kim?
This is the dancing we've got.
He'll have to cut us off, Emily. He'll have to shut us up. The Kim Gravel Show is produced and edited by Zach Miller at Uncommon Audio. Our associate producer is Kathleen Grant, the brunette exec. Production help from Emily Breeden and Sarah Noto. Our cover art is designed by Sanaz at Mammarian Creative, and Mike Kligerman edits the show.
Talent booking by Central Talent Booking.
And a special thanks to the team at QVC. Head over to thekimgravelshow.com and sign up for our mailing list. Again, we can't do this without you, so thank you for listening, and we love you.